Hi, this is Dana Gould, and you're listening to New Dissident Radio, where we've finally gotten the video out of audio video.
Just so you guys know, we do the show for 1 hour, finish the free version of the show, and then we do another 30 minutes.
So we only get paid for the last 30?
What you and I negotiated has not changed. Hello, and welcome to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. Today's episode brought to you by The Big Bang.
Boom.
Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hi, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the Intertubes, and as the lead singer of Penn Jillette's No God Band, which headlined TAM 2012 in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. You can find links to our guest website, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, subscribe to our premium 90-minute full-length episodes, and our email at skepticallyyours.net.
If you'd like to take part in the live chat moderated by Joe Swam, go to the Facebook group Skeptically Yours, Skeptic Tank, join our group and chat us up.
And please go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, write a review, help us get in the top 10.
Do it and win $1 million.
No one gets $1 million for writing a review.
$1?
No.
We also need to tell them they can subscribe to the full 90-minute show.
You got that part right, Heather. I don't know why everyone doesn't just subscribe right now.
But what does a premium subscription buy them?
Great question, Heather. An extra half hour of hilarious content that you can only hear if you are a premium subscriber.
Why, that's amazing,
that's
Emery.
Exactly what I was thinking in my brain space, Heather.
We sound like idiots, you know.
Yeah. We only have a couple of rules on our show. Rule number one.
Guests may plug anything they want, including the chai hole of Sylvia Brown.
And rule number two. If you're a listener who's ever been offended by anything, get a sledgehammer and destroy your computer now. This show has no restrictions on language or content, and certainly has nothing for you, you backwater redneck who couldn't pull a Focus with an automatic flip cam if your inbred kid's life were on the line. We're recording live at TAM 2012. In the studio, we have Jamie Ian Swiss. You know him as The Honest Liar. You also know Mr. Deity, who's with us, as Brian Keith Dalton, a fixture on The Ardent Atheist, my favorite bacon-loving Jew, B.J. Kramer. And joining us when he gets here, Banachek will be here, too. You know these guys from the World of Reason.
That was a lot of vocal modulation for 11 a.m.
I'm sorry.
That was amazing.
Sorry, Brian. What time did you get to sleep last night?
A little after 5.
Yeah. This sucks for you. Yeah.
You were up praying?
I'm hoping no one's expecting, like, humor or insight from me.
No, we've
seen your show, Brian.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no, I talked to Jarrett. He goes, if you want to book a guy who just kind of mumble and stare at you, get Brian.
That's me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I should have had you on at 3, shouldn't I?
Probably.
I totally
But
understand.
I do have my morning voice now. I sound much deeper than I usually do.
Yeah, he usually sounds like Mike Tyson.
He sounds a little sexy.
Yeah, usually I got the Mike Tyson thing going. But I'm feeling good.
Jamie Ian
vocally.
Swiss.
Yes, sir.
I've wanted to get
you on
the show. No. I've wanted to get you on the show forever. And
it's all I ever think about.
I'm a big fan. Every time you're in L.A., I wanted to put you on Ardent Atheist. You're always doing shows over at the Magic Castle.
At the Magic Castle, exactly.
You're a busy, busy man. And we do the show. Ardent Atheist is Wednesday 7 to 8:30, and he's always on stage and can't do it for me. So I'm glad you're here at TAM. I'm glad we were able to get you on.
Delighted to be here.
Yours. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Nice to be had.
BJ.
Yes, sir.
Fuck off. So,
love you too, man.
I love this guy. B.J. Kramer. Listen, this is our second episode of Skeptically Yours, so I guess I should tell people who you are. We're going to have different answers for this. He's a Jew.
I was indeed once a Jew.
Once a Jew. I like the way you put that. That's really nice. You kind of are. You're even shuffling off the social portion. That
actually went first.
It did go first?
It really
kind I've of seen
did.
You with Jews.
I've seen you with Jews. What does that mean?
I think I'm looking at two.
You're looking at the hollow shell that remains.
No, I think now the shell is filled with joy and happiness.
And bacon.
My nice, warm, gooey, salty, oily center.
He loves bacon. He's a bacon guy. B.J. Kramer is the guy who supplied all the bacon for Penn Jillette's party, the bacon and donut.
Yeah, it was about half the bacon that was required,
right?
Apparently.
I know. Yeah. Did we run out halfway through?
Yeah, embarrassingly so. Like second or third song, bacon's gone. It was the same as last year.
It happened last year. You ran out of bacon pretty quickly.
Cheap Jew. I made them swear to me. I had one thing. I was like, I don't really care what it tastes like. I don't care, you know, what kind of...
You don't even know what it tastes like.
Yeah, I just want a lot.
I'm surprised you weren't there with some tongs, just like, you get one piece.
You know, I really don't want to push the Jew stereotype that far.
Too late.
Yeah, I do, actually. What am I talking about? It's a great idea. Next year, tongs. Yeah.
What's going to happen is we're going to keep doing this year after year, and eventually you're going to order enough.
Right,
and
exactly.
There's going to be a huge headline, 1,200 skeptics die of exploding hearts.
Yeah, that is what I'm going for.
you're infiltrating and trying to kill us.
Well, here, actually, now the cat's out of the bag, so my rabbi sent me on an undercover mission.
Bring me the exploded hearts of skeptics.
That's how they are? Yeah. I suspect.
That's why the band is so loud, otherwise you can hear the sounds of arteries hardening.
There's a Yiddish accent to that, actually.
Exactly.
I can't do it.
They went nuts, man. They were making bacon and donut sandwiches. Yeah. They were making parfaits out of bacon and donuts.
My absolute favorite moment of the night, and I think we could put a cap in this conversation.
Careful.
The strippers. There were strippers.
Yep.
And the two male strippers are both friends of mine.
That's
and
your favorite
been,
part of the night?
Yeah, baby. And they were, they've been working out like crazy.
Apparently making a lot of conversions.
And there's been, thank you. There's been a couple months of these guys like really watching what they eat and working out a lot, whatever. And both of them prepared plates mounded with bacon and donuts for the moment they got off stage.
Yeah.
So that they could re-expand their stomachs to their appropriate sizes.
Show business is an awful, awful business. So did they get sick?
I hope so.
Last year, Heather didn't get any donuts and no bacon.
Not
She's
one
the lead
donut,
singer of the
not
damn
one
band.
Bacon.
No donuts, no bacon. And then she came off the stage and got some, greasy, crappy cold bacon.
Well, it was cold by the time I got off stage because we got it. I got asked Gene to get it for me and make sure nobody touched it.
But no donuts were there, and she was pretty upset.
And that's the way it's going to be the rest of your goddamn life.
I was warned about you, Jamie.
But I did get a box. Emery got me a whole box.
Well, there was about two dozen boxes stacked in the back where all the staff of the room were hanging out. So they got more donuts than they could possibly need. But
Krispy Kreme wins.
I love Krispy Kreme, by the way.
Got enough donuts. What's wrong, BJ?
I'm just lamenting the sad fate of my existence that donuts are always more plentiful than bacon, and it's just wrong.
Is that code?
And far more plentiful than strippers.
Yeah,
bacon?
That's a real problem.
Bacon donut, you do the math.
Here's a little known fact. I was actually going to be one of the strippers, but was stopped by a very aggressive campaign, a petition campaign. Just so you know.
Yes, thousands of screaming people running from the room.
Yes.
That explains the bump in registrations. The KRF guy. Exactly.
When the news got out, wasn't tripping.
It's
boom.
All true.
That's nice. Brian, Mr. Deity is wonderful.
Well, thank you.
And what you do,
I think
he's
an asshole. But
he is an asshole.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful
a
asshole.
A wonderful asshole.
It's really a great, great, great show.
A beautiful asshole.
Yeah.
That's
it
what
happens.
She says,
it does happen. Trust me.
And you use humor to get to people, right? I mean, that's...
It's all I have.
It's all you have.
It's all I have. I was going to go with looks.
Right?
I was going to go with looks.
You were
going to
go with nudity.
Work. Yeah.
And then...
Yeah.
But I've always felt like the best way to educate people is through humor. The second best way is ridicule. They kind of go hand
I do
hand.
Both.
You
yeah.
do both, right?
I do both. Yeah, I agree with that because it's so it's not aggressive in any way, and if you've got a person laughing at something that they even maybe don't agree with, there's somehow that a door opens up and a little thought gets in there, and I get emails all the time from people who watch the show, and I was a born again Christian, and your show, started me thinking about this or the problem of evil or, whatever. And it does change minds.
We get Heather and I with the Ardent Atheist show. We get on occasion, very rarely, but on occasion we will get that email. The more common one is, I felt so alone. Thank you. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's true too.
And so I think the bulk of what we in the comedy aspect of skepticism or atheism do is mostly we give people a community and a comfort. And that, I think, is the bigger thing. What happens there is when our community becomes more visible and grows, the next thing you know, there are people that are thinking
about, you know, getting out of that closet.
Right.
Know?
Well, when you're in the faith community,
yeah,
and you generally, particularly in my religion, which was Mormonism,
yep,
it's very insular. And when you talk about these issues, you talk about it with other people who think like you do.
Right.
And despite the fact that you may have a lot of doubts in your head, they never get out. And so when you actually, you know, when they can actually find other people, like you said, who have these kind of thoughts roaming around in the back of their head, right, they do start to feel like it's okay to explore them and to think about them. And, you know, there's nothing better than humor,
right,
to open that up.
Is that what keeps you going? Is that what keeps you?
No, the need for money.
Ah.
Yeah, because I get paid to do the show. But
right.
The main thing is, you know, I saw Jamie's talk yesterday, which was amazing. Just an absolutely fantastic talk. And, yeah, about the primacy of skepticism. And I so agree with that. But my particular take on it is that in terms of fighting it, from my background and what I can most add to that fight is religion is really the gateway drug to all supernatural, not all, but for most people, particularly in this country, it's the gateway drug to all mystical bullshit,
right,
you know, because it presumes that there's something beyond this world, some supernatural realm that none of us can explain and is beyond the rational and the reasonable and the empirical and the, you know, all of that. And so if you can kind of remove that one card from the deck, the whole...
It's a foundation.
I'm going to mix metaphors. The whole house of cards collapses.
That's what happened to me. I mean, I was a Christian.
Right.
And I didn't think about it. So
right.
I still thought ghosts might exist.
Right.
I thought
exactly.
There might maybe be an afterlife. I just didn't consider it, you know, because there was a God. So there had to be all this other magic bullshit going
right.
on.
When you start thinking skeptically, when you start thinking critically, I'm amazed by this. My mother is going through it as we speak in her 60s, and she's 68, just became an atheist about 4 or 5 years ago. And
praise be.
Right?
Praise
Hallelujah.
Be. Yeah.
It's amazing to watch that process. But she and I were in Florida. We were running around in the car together, and she said something about all of her husbands being...
All of them?
Well, like dozens. It's I love my mom dearly. She's a whore, but she's been married three times.
I love her dearly
times.
Too. Yeah. So do a lot of guys. Anybody? Anybody else?
Or anybody want to? my mom became an atheist first, and this speaks to what your speech, Jamie, at the your keynote. The thing that happened with her is it's unfolding slowly. She keeps finding these things that she should think critically about that she didn't even realize,
right,
like astrology.
Right. Right.
She said all her husbands were the same sign.
Right.
And I'm driving down the road with her, and I'm taking for granted. I'm like, I'm making the mistake that, come on, you shed off God 4 years ago. What's wrong with you?
Right.
Why are you saying that? It's a process.
I went Jamie's way, actually. I became a critical thinker first, and that kind of led me out.
Yeah.
So I agree that's it's a valuable asset if
you can
get people to think critically.
And what I was speaking about at the conference was that this is why I'm a skeptical activist rather than an atheist activist, even though I'm certainly an atheist personally and a supporter of atheist activism. But I think that skepticism is about teaching people how to think, not what to think.
Right.
And I don't really care as an activist about particular conclusions, because if we teach you to think in one way, you know, that may... I like to think that leads a lot of people to atheism eventually, but it's not a requirement to be a critical thinker.
There are a lot of skeptics who are deists, I guess.
Absolutely.
Not a lot,
absolutely. Well, no, there's probably a TAM. We have, I think, when we last surveyed or whatever, I mean, it might be a third or more of the audience is not atheist, not identify as atheist, maybe as much as 40%. And I think that's absolutely the way it should be in the skeptical movement. I have no requirements, no litmus tests, what you have to believe, something you have to believe to be a part of the skeptic movement, the skeptic tent, or essentially be interested in the skills of critical thinking and a scientific worldview. That's what I'm concerned about, because I think if you adopt a scientific worldview, regardless of what particular conclusions you get to, you are going to make the world a better place today, right now,
right,
more than yesterday. And that's what I'm concerned about. That's why I want people to become critical thinkers and embrace the scientific worldview, not because I have a particular interest in any particular belief they embrace, but rather because I think that's the way out of our challenges as human beings.
I'm very optimistic about the fact about the idea that the younger generation is being accidentally taught to think critically. And one of the most, there's a lot of things that are involved here, but one of the most effective means by which this is happening, in my opinion, this
Scooby-Doo.
Is my opinion. Scooby-Doo is one.
Scooby-Doo rocks.
Zoinks. So one of the things that's happening is these iPhones and these Androids, they're in the pocket of every kid. Mm-hmm. And this has, when I was a kid, we had the Encyclopedia Britannica and Mom and Dad.
And it was very heavy.
It was
very heavy.
Yeah.
And talk about his mom again.
And you couldn't. And you could not do
download porn.
You could not.
Yeah.
You could not do a keyword search in an encyclopedia.
Right.
And to be accurate, the encyclopedia is a single source of information. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whatever's in there, I was brought up to believe was the bottom line. That was the answer. Not everything in the encyclopedia is complete A or B accurate. You know what I mean?
It's also the answers and not the method. There's very little skepticism in Britannica. I grew up in a radically religious household that paid lip service to rationality and everything, but it was always filtered through this religious thing. So there was enough subtly wrong with it that I completely missed the boat.
The Jewish concept is to lay down a foundation of faith, mm-hmm. and then lay on top of it this completely false idea, mm-hmm. that everyone's thinking critically.
Yeah, and it's kind of like how they came about to be the race that lawyers are descended from.
We just realized earlier before that we started the show that we were talking about Jesus being a Jewish carpenter. It occurred to me, I don't know another one. That's the only Jewish carpenter I've ever heard of.
Well, you know what's really sad is when you become a skeptic later in life, especially, you end up losing a bunch of friends and loved ones because you feel compelled to say, you know, there's not a ghost in the attic if that person believes in ghosts, or, you know, that person isn't psychic. And they start to just, it's like a separation. You know, what was that Superman movie where he goes into that big tube and, you know, he separates from Superman and becomes Clark Kent again? That's what it feels like. You're just like, okay, well, now I'm normal, but these people are all kind of crazy and they don't want to have anything to do with you.
Yeah, I find that sometimes I feel really disconnected from people. Good friends.
There could be many reasons for this, Emery.
No.
Try deodorant.
Shower might work.
All right, cool. I'll, listen, I'm open to listening. I have a friend. The whole ghost thing, you know.
Yeah.
And he got really upset with me. It was really interesting, and we remained friends. It was okay, but I kept challenging him, and he told the story. And I think it was Randy. Who knows the story of Randy having an out of body experience?
Do
you know that story?
Oh, yeah.
I heard it. I can't repeat it.
He felt like he was floating over his bed. He saw the.
This was from the heart during the heart surgery, right?
I'm not
was
sure,
it?
But
I don't know if it was. What I heard was that he was laying in bed, and all of a sudden, could see himself from above the bed, laying in the bed sleeping.
I think there was a mirror in the poker.
Yeah, I was going to say here. Yeah,
this is a really cool. This is a really cool story. This explains so much, and I love that it happened to Randy, and I love that Randy told the story. I hope to get him on the show one day to tell it totally accurately. But from what I understand. From what I heard, he went downstairs when he woke up, and he got his partner, and he said, I just had an out-of-body experience. And they sat down and started discussing it, and he described it very, very intricately to his partner. And he described the blanket that was over him. And his partner goes, what color? And he said again what color it was, and his partner said, no, I changed the blanket yesterday. There's a different blanket on
there. Also, he said that there was a cat on the bed.
Oh, I didn't hear the cat story.
Yeah, I'm looking it up here. The color of the bedspread and the placement of his cat on the bed. And others were able to show him that the bedspread he saw on his bed was in the laundry and that the cat had been outside all night long. So,
really?
Yeah.
So two facts, mm-hmm. when he inspected what happened, proved that he only had what he realized it was just a dream. Now that is so telling. You know what I mean? James Randi is the premier skeptic on the planet. There isn't another skeptic as thorough as James Randi, and he actually had an experience that made him question reality for a minute.
My friend David Glasner, I went in his house, and on top of his refrigerator, he has
James Randi was there.
Yeah, with his cat. He had a card, a playing card on the top. He didn't know what it was. And I said, why do you have this playing card up here? He goes, just in case I have an out-of-body experience, if I happen to... I have little things around the house so that I can, you know, see if it actually was an out-of-body experience or if I'm just shitting myself.
Yeah, exactly. If somebody claims the ability to have an out-of-body experience, all you do is put a book on the top shelf that they can't otherwise reach without climbing up there and say, tell me what's on page 236.
My out-of-body experience is I always see myself with two women. And that's equally unreal. Sadly.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
And that story to me highlights the hallmark of good skepticism. Randi was confronted with these discrepancies and was like, oh.
Yep.
That was then going on in my head. We've all met people who've had similar things, and they're confronted with the evidence that shows that they're what they assumed was wrong, and they'll attempt to explain it away to conform with what they've already decided to be true.
Right.
That seems to be what we do naturally.
Yeah.
That is how the human brain works without work.
We have to find a narrative to explain what the hell just happened.
Mm. Well, it's also a lot of gullibility and just someone just believing what someone says. My best friend in Philadelphia, who I love dearly, she just moved into a new house, and she goes, oh, there's a ghost in the attic. And I said, well, how do you know there's a ghost in the attic? Well, the guys that were working on here told me a story about this little boy who, died in the house, and his spirit is there. I'm like, so... You heard a story from a construction worker that there's a little boy ghost in, and his name is, and she's like, oh, David. I'm like, okay, so you believe this is true?
I'm David.
You believe it because some guy told you?
Please
Where's the proof of that?
Some carpenter? He probably wasn't even a Jew.
I'm
yeah.
Dead.
His name was Jesus.
I'm David. I'm dead.
Jesus.
Boo. Boo.
But it's
I'm a ghost.
Just like,
boo.
Yeah, I mean, is she's, how do you tell her, Why are you believing this guy?
What you do is you make a hilarious show like Mr. Didi makes, and then you wait for her to come across it. That makes
It'll
fun
be
of
waiting for a long time. She barely uses the internet.
Yeah.
That's probably why she's not critically
Send
thinking.
A link.
Well,
where do people find you, Mr. Didi?
MrDidi.com, mostly on YouTube. Most of our subscribers, most of the people who see the show see it via iTunes because when we went with Sony, they wouldn't let us post on YouTube. So everyone kind of moved to iTunes to get the show, but YouTube is a good place. I like the community there and the comments and all that. It's
insightful
very fun. You
comments,
don't get that
usually.
Insightful,
yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
I have one of the things that I'm most proud about is the people who watch my show and comment are some of the funniest, most insightful, sharp people I've ever met. I mean, they crack me up and they make really good points. A lot of times, we'll have believers watch the show and then comment and the threads, and it's fun to watch. That people pile on and just cream these people. It's beautiful.
Right.
It's really moving.
It is. And it's just going to happen more and more. I mean, the more we do this kind of work, the more people are going to actually go, oh, yeah.
I've actually developed a nice relationship with a theologian in England. We write back and forth about...
Consorting
with the title
enemy,
of
sir.
My forthcoming autobiography. A theologian in England.
Yes.
I thought you meant the hell you say.
but it's always great to hear, what they're thinking about this stuff so that you can, in your next video, maybe you can take that apart. It's a constant cycle of, let's deconstruct that bullshit.
So in other words, you're not trying to break the cycle of abuse.
No, I'm not.
We get a lot of emails with guest suggestions for our show for Ardent Atheist.
Yes.
And just yesterday... I got an email from someone saying they listen to my podcast. I'm in Kansas, he says, though I'm from Texas. There is an awesome...
It's already a sad story.
No. Hey, I'm from Kansas, mister. There is an awesome, well-educated, theologically sound pastor in Texas who would have some good answers for your show. Now, again, this is for Ardent Atheists, not Skeptically Yours. When I listen, you tend to argue with Christians who not only are I'm not kidding. He wrote ineducated.
in-educated.
Who are not only ineducated Christians.
How would he know?
But also, their relationship with God is not even the focus and center of their lives. I believe Matt Chandler from the Village Church in Highland Village, Texas, would be a worthy guest who would actually challenge your belief system. And right there, I mean, what we don't get a lot of those. In fact, when I get an email like that for Ardent Atheists, I can't believe we have even one religious listener. We say the igger word and the unt word so often. It's almost like
I'm not even familiar with those words.
You're not?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Is it that early that you can't figure out what I mean?
Yeah, that. Mm-hmm.
We'll email you, Brian.
The coffee the coffee hasn't kicked in.
A lot of people call it the N-word. I prefer to call it the Iger word.
Okay, now I know what
you mean. But you know, it's almost like garlic to Christians, the language that we use and the ideas that we tend not to have those listeners. So
Christians are afraid of garlic.
Garlic to Christians?
Yeah. Do you not get it?
I just think it's funny.
Yeah, I know, right?
By the way, that's one of the reasons why we never have used any foul language on the show, and that's intentional because we have.
You're calling me a dick, aren't you?
No. I would say from the email I get, I would bet about 30 to 40% of the viewers of our show are religious.
Yeah.
Because that you know that.
That's awesome.
Listen,
the first couple times I watched some of your shows, it took me a minute to figure out what perspective your show was coming from, and that's the reason, I'll bet.
Having been religious, I know that the vast majority of religious people out there are not the nuts that you see on the evening news. They're the man bites dog story.
Right.
But most people are fairly reasonable, and they like the fact that there's some comedy about something that they know about and like and care about. I get every year I get some kind of email. We had last summer, some pastor did a 12-week Bible course through the summer based on the Mr. Deity episodes. And we have
that's great.
I had one pastor write me, and she wanted to use Mr. Deity in The Really Big Favor, which is the one where we introduce Jesus with the stick figure drawing of Jesus on the cross, as their opening Easter video. And I'm like, oh my God, these are the coolest Christians. I can hang with these people.
Yeah, no shit.
So I do know that people who don't necessarily agree where I'm coming from watch the show and enjoy it, and they write me, and it's great. And
wow.
I do think, you know, at some point, you know, I just keep thinking, okay, when they've watched a certain amount, it's going to finally, you know, that seed is going to get in there and start to grow.
Right.
So I do get the emails saying things have changed.
Cool. Jamie, you do magic.
Yes, I do.
Like nobody else, by the way, I can say.
Then I would like to see you for this live audience right here in the studio for us, and the listening audience. It won't be as impressive for them, but I would like you to...
I'll describe it in great detail.
Change BJ into someone else.
Yes, I will now perform a magical spell, transforming a former Jew into a current... What is your former religious affiliation? I don't really know.
I was a little everything.
This is the worst magic trick I've ever seen! Or heard. Banachek!
Ladies and gentlemen, Banachek!
Yeah.
Good to be here.
We have to have at least three listeners that are like, that was amazing!
Yeah, the same ones using Mr. Deity in the Bible class. Oh my God, it's a miracle!
Thanks for being here, Banachek.
Damn, you're good, Jamie. Good to be here.
Banachek, tell us about the paranormal challenge, sir.
Oh, well, we have $1 million for anybody that can do anything paranormal.
There you have it. Thanks for coming.
No.
Everybody got to laugh. $1 million, ladies and gentlemen.
Jamie and I are either going to love or hate each other at the end of this.
My
I think
time's
it's
up.
So tell us all about
it. Under proper observable conditions, I have to say that. So, yeah.
That's the thing. We were having a discussion with someone on a wall, and Heather always throws it out.
I say, you know, people go, well, such and such is psychic, or I'm claiming this is true. And I say, well, you know, you can win $1 million. All you have to do is go to this website, sign up for this. And someone came back with me at, well, that That Drigged. Test is not fair.
Drigged.
It's rigged.
Fucking game.
There's no way. There's no way anyone can win this
they
challenge.
They will say that, but we work very closely with the claimants to try to get a protocol that will work for them and will work for us, and they agree on that protocol.
He basically said that he misconstrued the words. He said that you choose the activity that they're going to do. Or
nope.
No,
absolutely not.
I know. Yeah. I know that. And I said no. They talk to the person and they decide together what's going to happen.
Yeah, we don't create an arbitrary test for someone to come in and meet. We have a category of the version of the test like that that we created for the Nightline test that we did last year so that we could invite some people in.
And that was a first for us because that was always a concern that afterwards the psychics would come to us and they would say, well, that's not what I normally do.
Yeah.
But we circumvented that by interviewing them ahead of time and saying, look, this is the test. If you don't want to take this test, we're happy to work on a protocol that will work for you at a later date. But if you want to do it today on Nightline, what will do, you know, how well do you think you're going to do?
So we had created basically a small catalog of standardized tests, if you will, that we hoped would match or might match with people's claimed abilities so we could shorten the process, basically, and have people come in for a one-shot try at the $1 million prize, and that was the purpose of that. But in general, in the larger purpose, in the general history of the $1 million challenge and the challenge we're doing today, it's purely the test is purely created based on the claimant.
He also claimed that someone won already and never got
and didn't get the money.
This sounds like somebody who's just read some of the propaganda that's online that few people write and put out there and hope people listen to, and they listen to
I mean, we still have people who say, you know, you don't really have the million, but it's
really
it's an easy thing to substantiate. Yeah, the money is in escrow.
And the bank statement is online.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. People are
now Jamie, you two work together on this, right? You guys
correct.
Both
we are part of. There's a subcommittee.
Randy put it together, right? The JREF.
Yeah. Well, Randy, the idea of this prize has a long history, and Harry Houdini offered a personal cash prize for someone who could demonstrate a paranormal ability that he could not duplicate.
Randy, and that's the difference. Duplicate. Randy doesn't say.
Randy
you know,
was inspired by that, and for many years, Randy carried a $10,000 personal check for anyone who could demonstrate a paranormal ability under mutually agreed upon test conditions, and eventually. With the foundation, first the prize was raised to $1 million. It was sort of crowdsourced that prize originally, and then eventually became funded. And the million and more sits there in escrow. So,
the crowdsource was actually an issue because people would say, "Well, how do you know you're going to get that money?" And we didn't really know whether we could get that money from those people.
Right.
We had
people
put
who
the money in ourselves.
Committed to that.
So then Randy ended up getting the money put in escrow so that the money is there, so nobody could say that anymore. And now they still say the money's not there, so you can't win.
So there's a subcommittee at JREF, just to answer your question, there's a subcommittee at JREF that supervises the $1 million challenge, and Banachek and I are both members of that committee.
Right, and I appreciate you not saying that I'm the funder. I want to be secret about this. So,
oh, shit.
It is a secret funding, right? We don't know who put the money in?
It's anonymous funding.
Anonymous, right?
Yeah. Well,
sort of
now.
Kind of, sort of? Banachek's looking around. And
well, I just say it's kind of sort of because there's been a few articles that are written.
It's not. It's out there.
It's
about as a well kept secret as you know Iran Contra and Watergate.
Cool.
Okay, maybe a little better. Maybe a little better.
So when I first heard about it, I presumed that you just had complete and utter psychotic crackpots, you know, with hats on that were made out of tinfoil.
It's true.
Brian Dalton was one of our early applicants.
Those are your words.
No, those are my words. Let's just... Yeah, be very careful.
We get a lot of people that we do worry about at times because some of the claims that they give us. We also get claims that there's no way we could test them. Like one guy said, whenever he walks into a room, his mustache curls. So now, whenever
what, you can't well, test
well, no,
that?
No. Wait, let me finish that. His mustache curls whenever there's a ghost in the room. So.
What?
So, you know, how do you test that? Well, first of all, we've got to find a ghost. You know, that's the first thing we would have to do. And, of course, if we could do that and find somebody that could prove to us there was a ghost, they would get the $1 million. But so we can't test that.
And the ghosts don't like to work for free.
I get people like there was a guy who said he can stop earthquakes before they happen. And I said, well, how are we going to test this? He says, well, I am going to predict when an earthquake's going to take place. You will find a medium or a clairvoyant who will validate my prediction. And I said, well, wait a minute. Wouldn't they get the $1 million? And I said, but you know what? Let's get beyond that. What happens then? He says, well, then I will predict an earthquake 6 months in advance. They will validate my prediction, and I will stop it. Yeah.
That's a level of dumb that I can't even fucking fathom.
But.
Wow.
But. Nevertheless, as Banachek says, these are people who really, we cannot find a way to test those claims.
Except for when I get death threats and things like that, Jamie. Then it, and it gets really, and I get like 40, 50
you get death threats
left on my answer machine a day and things like that. Then,
but
then,
that's
then,
so at, funny.
At that for you.
But, exactly.
But then at that point, you know, I do know that that person has some mental issues.
No, that's yes, obviously that's a different kind of issue. But in the larger, you know, sample here, we as testers, if you will, as people offering the prize,
and the people you're testing, they're testees,
exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Got it.
And we prefer two at a time, but we can't really judge that.
Yeah.
If someone comes in and has a claim and they're willing to meet the requirements of the challenge, then we can't get involved in judging their competence in any other way than what affects the
right. No, it's all about just the claim.
I mean, it is a fine line because what, you know, somebody who's mentally ill could possibly have a psychic ability.
Brian.
So can you say just because you're mentally ill, we can't test you?
Jamie's looking at me.
I'm amazed by that, though. You're
I'm waiting for the prize to go up to $2 million.
We have to be.
Because I figure taxes are going to take half.
You don't. Right? You do not. You don't get it for being mentally ill. That's not. That's
oh,
not
okay.
What it's
well, all right. Well,
taxes
shit.
Taxes are going to take half.
Jamie, what do you think?
Heather.
Hi.
Great show. Killer show. If you folks,
Heather Henderson, you folks,
tonight.
The No God
Absolutely
Band,
great.
Who are listening, if you missed the No God Band the other night, and you missed Heather Henderson on stage,
then there is indeed no God.
Exactly. There is and
no
she
justice.
Hates you. Okay. Because really awesome
thank
show.
You so
it's
much.
Close to a paranormal experience as you can get.
It's true. It's true.
It was wonderful.
It was transcendent.
Right. It was wonderful. Right. Like being in a rock show with so many people and people reaching up to touch your hand. Yeah, that
right,
happened.
Right, uh-huh. Right.
They weren't reaching for your hand, honey.
Oh.
She's so innocent.
I just assumed. My question for you is, what do you think of television shows like Psychic Kids?
Horrible.
Well, the audience has spoken.
I think that's...
I'm going to let Banachek talk to this.
Sure.
We agree completely, but he commented on this publicly on the Nightline show.
I think it's abusive. I mean, to me, that's
exactly.
Abusive children. It's just... And you know, when a psychologist goes on such a show and sits on a bed with a young girl who has been sexually abused already and starts asking her questions, and that's the scene that you see on those shows. These shows, I mean, I'm sorry. I just.
And this is a woman who says. This is a woman who says, no, this is real. These children are terrified. They're afraid to go to sleep at night. Yeah, well, you have terrified them.
Yeah.
You have terrified them.
Heather, yeah. I want to make sure that we tell our listeners what happens on the show, because I don't want to encourage them to tune into the goddamn thing.
The last one I saw was two teenagers. Their mother encouraged them to look more into their psychic abilities. There was a male psychic that came in, and they would sit down in the dark outside in a field, and he would give them tests like, okay, something happened here, tell us what you're feeling. And she would say, there was a car wreck, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the insidious regression therapy thing, isn't it?
It's very leading. I mean, they lead these children, and they push them further and further.
Are you feeling this? Are you thinking this? And then they're
showing
yes.
their supposed
Chip
abilities.
Chip Coffee
and they
is
give
his
them, yeah,
name.
Chip Coffee. Yeah. Chip is the one that was laying on the bed with a girl.
It's
okay.
It's awful.
Yeah,
I can't. It's beyond my. I can't even make jokes about this show. It's absolutely awful. It's criminal.
That's why
it
I'm
is,
here.
It is criminal.
Yeah.
That's why you're here. And it's really getting bad when the superstars get involved, like, you know, My Famous Ghost Story or something like that.
Right. Yeah, they have stars telling ghost stories and shit. Which
Well, we know most actors are excellent critical thinkers and should be your source of scientific information about how the universe works.
Wait a minute. Now, listen, Tom Cruise.
Exactly. Yes, yes. No further questions, Your Honor.
Is, for the record, the punchline. So, yeah, that's... It's awful. Television is a really awful and really wonderful medium because we can do both of these things. It can be used for evil. It can be used for good. Penn and Teller's bullshit was absolutely amazing, and I can't wait till they're back on television, debunking and critically thinking again.
You know who else is great? South Park. Matt and
South
Trey.
Park, in my opinion, is one of the most important
social criticism. Yes.
I've never seen anything, and I can't imagine in my life I'll see anything as good as this.
I really think, you know, with bullshit is off the air at the moment, but as you say, Emery, it appears there's noises being made that something's going to come back with them, and I hope it happens. And I really think there was a kind of trilogy there of South Park on the social side, and bullshit. And Mythbusters.
You know,
I think these are terrific educational shows about critical thinking. I think these are some of the best examples of television showing people away.
Yeah.
Showing people away out of the ordinary. And I would add Louis.
Louis is wonderful. Yeah, absolutely.
Louis is awesome.
Louis C.K. Everybody knows Louis, right?
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Love it. Love this show.
That's where I get my favorite dick jokes. Louis C.K. He's a genius, in my opinion.
And fart jokes. Don't forget the fart jokes.
Oh, he does a great fart joke.
Yeah.
Banachek. Now, I know you can't
stay long.
Speaking
of dick jokes.
So ouch.
I know you can't stay long.
Ineducated.
You have.
Nice.
Who's going to make Jamie disappear?
Yeah. Right. No. Jamie will probably disappear or vanish or some other word that I shouldn't know. I know Penn Jillette. Why don't I know the fucking language?
He just poofs.
Ray Sips a low quitter.
I'm sorry. Let me get that
Jamie
right.
Jamie poofs.
Yeah. In a few moments, Jamie will be poofing Banachek away.
Exactly.
Is that the right language?
Wait a minute.
Jamie is my favorite poof duck.
You can see that on newporn.com later on.
So you're testing someone today, is that right?
We are.
Yeah, and this isn't your typical. You know, when we think of the $1 million challenge, we tend to think of it as being psychics, and those are the people that always apply, and it's not. We also get things like perpetual motion machines, fuel savers. And
oh, wow, right.
In this particular case, I had somebody who was going to be projecting an image to somebody else, but they backed out at the last minute. And because that had happened to me last year, I made sure that I had a backup as well.
Nice.
And if worse came to worse, I would be testing two people here. Maybe one of them would be live, one wouldn't.
Right.
So we have the backup, and the backup is one of the balance bracelets, which you see all over the place.
Oh, yeah. We made a video, Heather and I, last year. We were driving home. We stopped at a mall. And to get a bite to eat, and we went in, and I walked by one of these booths, and I had been very well educated by this time by the placebo band cats that made these to prove the point of the body. What are they called?
Power balance.
And they were actually, the power balance company was forced into a $57 million settlement. And my understanding is that now they're just being sold by different names. So
right. So we're walking along, and there's this woman, and she's doing that thing where you put your arms out and the balance.
Yeah,
bullshit.
That's what this guy's going to be doing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So I stopped and I handed Heather the camera and I said, film me. And so I'm standing there, and she does the balance thing. She made this awful mistake of throwing it in my hand, not putting it on my wrist.
Hmm.
So she puts it in my hand, does the test, and shows that I'm weaker without the band in my hand. And I go, do that again. So she does the test, the pre-test, and shows that I've got no balance, if you will. Then throws it in my hand again real quickly, and then goes to push down on my arm again, and I toss it away. And she doesn't notice. And she pushes, and I've got immense strength, four times the strength as I had in the previous seconds ago. And she goes, see the difference? And I go, I don't think it was the body band. I threw it down over there.
And did she say it was because you just touched it?
She didn't say that.
Oh,
no, she
really?
Was, no. She went.
See, I would have said that.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You're better at scamming people than she is. She went sheet white.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I said to her, I go, how do you sleep at night? And she goes, oh, the body band is very good for sleeping. I go, no. How do you sleep at night? So we put that up on YouTube, we were exposing that ourselves.
This guy actually has a little chip that he puts into them.
Is it a hologram?
It's not a hologram, but it's a little tiny chip that looks like an electronic chip.
that he sticks into these things. So we had some other concerns, of course, as a result of that. But I've had people really take a look at it, and it shouldn't be able to do anything.
So you've had it checked out.
I've had it checked out, and I will have it checked out again after.
I'm looking forward to hearing about the results.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's really two claims that are going on there. One is the fact that the applied kinesthesiology works, that it actually works. And then the other one is that the chip itself or the band itself actually works. So
right.
Yeah, but you know, it is the way that they always test it. It's the way they demonstrate it, so we're allowing it to go through for the challenge.
Well, they're using the known tools of charlatry. Charlatanry. Shut up. I'll kill you, Jamie Swiss. Charlatanry.
I'll reverse you.
Vanish, disappear, charlatanry. Shalitra vanishing. Shalitra magical. Sorry.
I can't wait to have you back.
She just used the
word, but seriously, Emery, the thing about it is, your salesperson, which I love that demo.
They
that's
have
really
to
great.
Know their life.
No, they do not.
Come on,
no,
Jamie.
No, they do not. No, this is.
No, they don't. No,
this
Jamie's
is
right.
the
they
mistaken
don't.
Assumption.
Some do. Some do.
This is the mistaken assumption, a very common mistaken assumption by skeptics. Skeptics are very quick, often too quick, to offer an explanation.
I sometimes take hours, for the record.
What Jamie's saying is absolutely true, because they teach these salespeople to do these techniques. They don't say to them, look, when you do this time, do this that time. They may say, you know, when you demonstrate it, don't use a band, and then the second time use a band. They may say that to them, and they may give them sort of an order, but they don't sit there and say, look, if you bend their arm in slightly, you'll be able to do this, you know, and if you keep
well,
the arm
out
straight,
about that.
You won't be able to.
When you push down on the arm while someone's standing on one leg, if you push down on the arm just right, and you don't throw them out of center of balance, they've got the strength to hold
But they know what's expected. Subconsciously, they know what's expected. So they do it subconsciously without even realizing they're
it's
doing
confirmation
it. Bias.
It's confirmation bias. It's confirmation bias.
I have
and
so
it's
much
not...
trouble with this.
You know, yes, exactly.
Let me give you an example.
It's really important that you think about
this. Have you ever done the stretch exercise? And this is the one where you hold the band, and then what you hold your arm out, you point, and you point to as far as you possibly can.
Yes,
right?
I know how that works.
And then they put it in your hand the second time and you do it,
and
now
you go further.
You go even further.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, but they're not doing that to you. You're doing that to yourself.
Right. That's a psychological trick.
And the same thing happens for the people that are doing the physiological on the people.
It's dowsing. It's dowsing. People who show up for dowsing tests are not aware.
They know the expected outcome. Wow. And so they press harder without even realizing they're doing it.
And the overwhelming majority of people who come in and actually try and follow all the way through in the challenge, the overwhelming majority are sincere.
Wow. I feel really bad for kicking that woman in the crotch.
Well, you know, this is something that I addressed in my talk. Which is that skeptics at the conference yesterday, which is that skeptics are very quick to judge both victims and victimizers. And a few days ago, DJ Grothy posted something on Facebook. It was a story about a psychic scam. Somebody came on and posted, and I don't know for sure if this was a skeptic, but someone came on and posted and said, psychic scammers and their victims deserve each other. Well, you failed as a skeptic.
Right.
You failed as a skeptic, and frankly, shame on you.
Yeah.
Because if we're here as skeptics to help people to think and to learn to think, then stop being in a hurry to be right.
Yeah.
Stop being in a hurry to be judgmental.
Yeah.
And figure out the much more difficult and interesting to understand phenomena of why people believe, why people are victimized.
I think you're very judgmental of skeptics. Well, I think that's a really good point. It's a common human problem.
You were not dealing I'm quite confident that the person you were dealing with in that mall was not deliberately or willfully
scamming. Put it this way. How would you feel if you have a belief and somebody came up and you truly believe something and they came up and got in your face?
Yeah.
Would it change the way you think about it, or would you put up a bigger wall?
Well,
yeah, for the record.
That's a tonal issue.
No,
I want to answer that question clearly.
Yeah.
And I do this work that we're talking about. So let me be very clear. I was not trying to convert or expose that woman to her own lies. I was trying to show anybody who would watch that video what's going on.
No, I think that's a different issue.
I agree with you. I think the problem
you're having, Emery, which is totally understandable and not uncommon, is how could this person be engaging in a physical act that you and I are both aware of and not be doing it deliberately?
Absolutely. And I know that you gentlemen are experts on all of this.
Right.
And in no way, shape, or you, the minute this show's over, I'm gonna take some notes and do some more reading and studying on this concept.
There were people who use pendulums.
Blown my mind.
You can give somebody a pendulum. I could hand pendulums to people.
Perfect example.
And I can tell them that it's going to move in a circle, and it moves in a circle, and they're amazed by it.
Yeah.
I can tell them that it's going to go back and forth, and it'll go back and forth, and they're amazed by it. They're doing it, but they don't realize they're doing it. It's the same kind of thing.
You're listening to Skeptically Yours on Dissident Radio and available in the iTunes Store. And now, a special announcement.
This is a big super shout out to a few of our listeners and viewers: Ryan, James, and Scott Horsfall, Wendy Hughes, Jarrett Kaufman, Ed Andrick, Andrea Hogan, Bruce and Julie Press, Ashley Hall, Casey Gaspari, I hope I said that right, Joan and Jean Kelly, Candace, just Candace, and Cameron Winters. These are the people in the room right now. We couldn't have a great show without them, so you're to blame if this is sucking. Thanks.
And now back to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. We're talking with Jamie Ian Swiss, Brian Keith Dalton, BJ Kramer, and Banachek.
I'm sitting here looking at the powerbalance.com website, and I'm astounded. They have mouth gear.
Really?
They
put them
right
in everything and anything.
I have the butt plug. It's phenomenal.
Brian, don't you ever say it's too early for you.
It's phenomenal.
That was the best joke on the show yet.
I'm using it right now.
How's your balance?
Very good. Very good.
It helps center you up, doesn't it?
It really helps when you're bending over to have that kind of balance.
And I'm guessing you are quite regular now.
I'm going to milk this for all it's worth.
Good night, everybody, and thanks for coming to the show. Or coming on the show, as the case may be.
As will Jamie Ian Swiss.
Coming on the show. Nice, nice. Why don't you vanish Banachek for us?
Jamie?
Poof-da!
BJ's back. That was amazing.
Thank God he's gone.
Let's hear it for Banachek, folks. Thanks for sharing with us, sir.
Thank God he's gone. I thought he'd never leave.
He's drinking that monster drink shit, man. That'll kill you, that stuff, won't it? Or does it give you balance?
It's not as good as the butt plug.
It's not as good as the butt
not.
Plug. Yeah. When I think a beverage that'll keep me awake, I think butt plug.
5-hour butt plug.
Twice in a row.
If you can do 5 hours, you know you're a man, and also that you're safe in prison.
Takes a true man to wear a 5-hour butt plug.
That's right.
Good God. Oh, all right.
I've been watching way too much porn.
Yeah. I don't know that that's possible.
No, I do. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What was I thinking?
And I don't know why we're not sponsored by RedTube.com.
I'm uncomfortable.
It's the butt plug. Take that thing out, Jamie.
You put it there. You get it out.
Oh, my God. I've created a monster.
I feel left out.
Come on.
I remember. Let's make up for that. I remember saying at the top of the show that we're doing Skeptically Yours, not Ardent Atheist. We're not going to get too ribald.
Read the card.
So are you involved in this thing that he's going to do, the testing of the...
Yeah, absolutely, yes. No, yeah, we've actually spent
a
lot
of
time...
Are you doing it on the stage? Or
yes.
I just can't wait. Yeah. I just can't wait to see this.
I mean, the $1 million challenge, it's a fascinating thing to be directly involved in it. You know, I grew up knowing about Randy's $10,000 check, and if you saw the Nightline episode about a year ago, in which we had a number of psychics come in New York City, and we had devised these single-shot tests, these one-shot tests for the $1 million, not a preliminary test, on camera. And, you know, it was a really interesting experience for me because Randy's been a hero and a mentor and a friend and a colleague in the course of my life. And he was not there with us. And there we were, Banachek and I, DJ Grothy also, with the million on the line.
Yeah.
And it's a big responsibility, quite frankly.
has anybody ever come along who made you guys go, oh, shit.
No, not yet. But the thing about it is that's not really the concern. You know, we don't have to be concerned. I'm not very concerned about whether, you know, this person or that person has this ability or if this bracelet's going to work or whatever. I'm not very concerned about that. Well, what I am concerned about is the design of the experiment, is the design of the challenge.
Right.
And if we have we done something wrong?
Have we made a mistake
that will allow... Because we're not doing science. We are very clear about the fact that the $1 million challenge is not science. It's a one-shot test, but it's based on scientific principles in terms of how we devise the challenge, the specific test. And so what we're trying to do is create a proper test. And, you know, probability being what it is, someone could pass the test, and it doesn't necessarily prove a paranormal ability, but it would be worth $1 million if that's what was on the line at the moment. Right?
Well, there's an example of this. I've heard that there was a man, I think before the $1 million challenge was in place, there was a man apparently who said that he could look at a record and tell you the music.
Oh, yes, there. Yes. Randy likes to tell this story.
I love the story. And will you share that with the listeners?
I think this fellow was on, got a media attention, and I think he was on the Carson show at that time.
I think that's right.
Back then, as I remember. And, and Randy thought it was a paranormal claim. The guy claimed to be able to determine the music by looking at an LP record, a vinyl record.
And by the way, for those listeners, a vinyl record is a thing we used to listen to music on.
Yes, yes.
That does not fit
in the days of horse-drawn ice men who came and brought... When they brought the ice for your ice box, they also brought a thing called a record.
It spins at 33 or 78 RPM. Right. Okay.
So anyway, and the guy could look at the record and tell you the music. And indeed, upon further investigation, now this was not this did not turn out to be a challenge.
It wasn't a paranormal claim on his part,
right? He was saying, I can do this.
I'm using my eyes.
Exactly.
That's
exactly
what he was saying.
And Randy looked into it, among others, and it turned out the guy could do it.
Yeah, that was it. At the end of the day, the guy was looking at records and... Based on the patterns, he could actually tell if the music was rock and roll. If it was, they didn't do rock and roll in the days of records, did they? classical. So, and he got so adept at it that he could actually tell you the musicians and the composers. I heard. Did that go too far?
Yeah,
in terms of
it sounds too far, but I don't. Yeah. I can't say I remember the details.
I thought he was able to say that is Chopin's. There was some he could actually name. And I remember saying, wait, did they cover the label up? But
right, yeah, no, well, that was the thing, yeah, right? Did we cover the label up? Because when you do the preliminary test, they always get it, dowsers always get it right when they know where it is.
Right, that's
exactly
right.
And then when they don't know where it is, they, oddly enough, perform at approximately the prediction of chance.
So there are scenarios you have to be careful of.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but when I said, do you ever say, oh, shit? What I really meant was when someone steps forward and shows you initially or claims what they can do and you're looking critically at it and trying to figure out how to test it properly, when that happens, has anybody ever done something for you guys where you're like, oh, that's impressive? That's kind of what I meant. Not, oh, my God, we're going to lose the money, but
not,
oh, my.
Not that I can particularly recall, frankly. I wish it would happen. I wish it would happen. I wish we could. I will tell you, it was a funny moment. It was a great moment in the Nightline test. We had someone who was, we had 12 envelopes that contained photographs, 8x10 photographs. 11 of them contained 8x10 photographs of a living person, and one contained a photograph of a dead person. So that a person who was claiming to be a medium would be able to determine which one was the dead person by sort of connecting to the spirits so on. Yeah. Right. So this was like an off-shelf test that we designed that that a medium might feel was a fair test. And they all claimed it. They all agreed that it was a fair test and that they would pass until they failed, and then they said it wasn't a fair test, which is typical. But be that as it may, and they had to do a number of trials. They had to get, they had to do 9 right in order to win the million. And this was the very first trial. And basically, Banachek was the guy on camera doing all this, and I was in the background and watching and observing and so on and so forth, because it is my job to help make him famous.
We're going to get right back to that. We have to wrap up the free show real quick.
But if you are listening to the free version, we're out of time. So, I want to thank all my guests, Jamie Ian Swiss, Brian Keith Dalton, BJ Kramer, and Banachek for being here today. I also want to thank my I also want to thank my co-host, Heather Henderson, and Dissident Radio. Tune in next week. We'll be talking about
logic.
That's what we always talk about. That's it for the free version of episode 2. If you'd like to hear the full 90-minute show, please go to skepticallyyours.net. Someone had skepticallyyours.net. She wouldn't give it to me.
That's why my show isn't called Mr. God.
Please go to skepticallyyours.net/premium and subscribe. I'm your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson. Our theme music, courtesy of the sound editor of The Aristocrats, Eric Wilson. And special thanks to our moderator, Joseph Swam, and our digital publicist and web nerd, Cameron Winters.
You've been listening to Skeptically Yours on Dissident Radio. Skeptically Yours is a product of an ever-expanding universe.
New Dissident Radio. Listen before it's illegal.